Coming up on this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society, cooler temperatures overnight as Nintendo purchases Shiver Entertainment. It's dangerous to go alone, so the Nintendo Cartridge Society goes with you. Welcome to Nintendo Cartridge Society. My name is Patrick Ellers, and I am joined, as I'm always joined, by my co-host, Mark Mitchell. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to be talking about the news from the week, including Nintendo acquiring Shiver Entertainment. And then on Thursday, we are talking about the legacy of the Nintendo GameCube library. But Mark, in the meantime, how's it going?
It's going great. How's it going for you, Patrick?
I always get nervous when I'm doing like a character voice within the opening of the show, because I got to do like... Because I'm already doing a character voice.
The layers go deep.
The layers go deep, and I've got to be like, is this me doing the voice, or is it the announcer me doing the voice?
Are you ever worried when you're two layers in that you're not going to be able to dig yourself out and find your actual voice again?
As long as I don't have another layer in there, then I got to bring the little top with me and spin it, make sure that I can get out. Is that the third layer that they, or is the fourth layer the, like,
I've only seen that movie. Whose name I'm blanking on.
Like, I love
there's
this.
There's panic in
I'm
my
not,
eyes.
I'm not going to tell
no,
you what
gonna,
it is.
I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
I'm going to get there.
Yeah, you
it's,
should.
It's Christopher Nolan Inception.
There we go.
I've only seen Inception once, and it was in theaters.
Yeah, same.
And I remember really enjoying it, and that's part of the reason why I've chosen to never watch it again.
Right, because what if you don't enjoy it now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the stakes aren't that high.
Right.
I'd just be like, oh, that movie that I liked 15 years ago or whatever, I don't like as much anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you're a different person. The media landscape has changed in that time. Like,
but I've only seen it that once. So
right.
I don't remember if it was three layers or if that's just the appropriate layers of a really good dip.
Well, I mean, the appropriate layers of a really good dip are seven.
Seven?
Yeah, seven layer dip.
It's like we're in the White House all of a sudden.
The White House famous for its dips, of course. No, back to I was going to say Tenet, but Inception. I have not seen.
Batman Begins.
Ten? What? Mark, we got to get on the same page here. I have also only seen Inception the one time in the theater, and I didn't like it.
Oh, you did not like it?
I did not like it, no. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, people were like, it was so confusing. And I was like, they never stop explaining to you how the movie works. Anyway, we're not here to judge whether or not Inception is a good movie. We are here to...
Interstellar.
What about it?
Oh, I thought we were just naming...
Oh, sure. The Prestige.
The Christopher Nolan movies. Dunkirk. My favorite Christopher Nolan movie.
Oh, interesting. Sarah had a panic attack during Dunkirk.
I totally believe that. I'd like, not specifically Sarah. I just
sounds
mean...
like it was a specific dig at Sarah.
No, just because that movie is anxiety inducing.
Yeah, it really is.
It's a ticking clock, literally, that entire movie.
The following.
Oh, yeah. Memento.
Is this good?
I don't know if it's good. It's happening.
Sorry, you were saying?
It's not worth it.
Okay, all right. Well, if you want to hear us name Christopher Nolan movies, you can head on over to patreon.com/Nintendo Cartridge Society, where if you are supporting us at the 8-bit or 16-bit levels, you can get access to our once-a-month episodes of miniseries that we are working on our way through. Mark, we are doing NCS Arcade right now.
That's right. That is a series where Patrick and I play games available on Nintendo Switch Online and Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack that we've never beaten before. We just released an episode on Sonic the Hedgehog 2 and an addendum episode where we talked about listener emails about Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Mm-hmm.
And for the month of May, we are going to be talking about the original NES Metroid.
Yes, so if you have comments, questions, memories, whatever about the original NES Metroid, or if you're playing along with us and you want to make sure that we read some of your emails, you should email us at nintendocartridgesociety@gmail.com and let us know that you want to talk about Metroid, because then we will use that and have a conversation using those emails.
Why can't Metroid crawl?
Why can't Metroid crawl? It's got no knees, that's why.
Metroid got no knees. No game, no knees.
That's right. No knees can't crawl, right?
It's a Metroid.
That's a Metroid. So any check that out if you are interested. Also, you should be in our Discord where you can also talk about Metroid, but we probably won't be able to collate that for use on an episode talking about it. But email us, NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com, and we will let you in there. Mark, we've got some kind of Nintendo Direct coming up in June.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you're not in the Discord to chat about that as it's happening, what are you doing?
It's one of those great questions of philosophy.
It's like a riddle. Yeah. I just want a quick shout out. I was on this week's episode of Video Games, a comedy show hosted by Jeremy Schmidt, featuring me, Connor McCabe, and July Diaz.
Killer lineup.
It's a killer lineup. We are talking about our favorite video game quotes.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a great episode idea.
Yeah. So check that out. It is in wherever you find podcasts. And then also just want to plug my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle source book that I wrote. Issues 1 and 2 are in comic stores now. Issue 3 comes out in June. So pre-order, it may be too late to pre-order issue number 3 at this point, but you can still order issue number 4. I'm positive of that. Check it out in comic book stores if you are interested in the Ninja Turtles or what I have to say about them. Mark, let's get into what we've been playing this week. Obviously, we've both been playing Metroid.
It's all about Metroid for me.
It's all about Metroid for
me. Yeah, that's basically what I played this past week.
Yeah, that's a lot of what I played as well, but we will save our commentary for that for the Patreon episode. Mark, a couple of Game Boy games showed up on Nintendo Switch Online last week. Basically, the second hour episode posted, they were like, oh, by the way, you get 3 Game Boy games. Mark and Patrick, you don't get to talk about it till a week later. But so those games are Baseball, Alleyway, and Super Mario Land.
Nice to see Super Mario Land on there.
Nice to see Alleyway on there.
I could take or leave Alleyway, but you're right.
I can't believe you do this to Alleyway every time.
nice to just from like a completionist perspective, nice to have that on there. Nice to have Baseball on there for the same reason.
Right. It's now just missing Tennis from the launch lineup. And I wonder if they'll do it. Because, like, there already is a Mario Tennis on the Game Boy Color. So, like, it truly would just be, like, a completionist thing to have the entire U.S. launch lineup available on NSO.
Yeah. And so, for that part of it, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm sure Tennis will show up there eventually. But never discount Nintendo's ability to just make super weird choices.
To just make no sense, yes.
When it comes to these Nintendo Switch Online releases.
But so I spent some time playing Alleyway, which Sarah was watching me play, and she said, I know you're having fun, but this is the most boring thing to watch. And I agree. Alleyway is just like a normal brick breaker, and is like kind of the perfect... sitting in the back of your mom's station wagon, you know, on a trip up north, game that you can kind of play forever, die and start over, and it's like nothing happened. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like playing Snake on your phone, right?
Maybe Nintendo purposefully held Super Mario Land from launch because they're like, we're already going to get press discussion about having Game Boy games on Switch. So let's just hold Super Mario Land for when we want another pop, you know, because I feel like, you know, they've released other Game Boy games and I feel like Super Mario Land was another level of discussion. You know, when that finally showed up, it filtered above the typical Nintendo fan sites that are keeping track of these and hit like the mainstream press, right? Like, oh, on the Verge, you can finally play Super Mario Land on Nintendo Switch Online.
Right, like the weirdest Mario game is now available for you to play.
Yeah.
I went through and I played the whole game, which took me all of 22 minutes. Like, I think you can beat this game faster than you can watch an episode of The Simpsons. It is so short. It is 4 worlds of 3 levels each, two of those levels are like vehicle levels. None of this is new to me. I had a copy of this game growing up. I just kind of want to like recap it here. But yeah, the end of World 2, you're in like a submarine and you're like shooting little torpedoes. And at the end of World 4, you're in a plane. So you can fight Tatanga, the alien who has captured Daisy. A couple like strange, funny things about this game. It has the same setup as Super Mario Brothers in that, like, when you get to the end of a world, there's what appears to be a princess, and they not even that, but like, you know, that like, thank you, Mario, but our princess is in another castle. So there appears to be a princess, but she turns into a bug or some kind of enemy and then like jumps away, right? And the text on screen says, thank you, Mario, and then, oh, Daisy! Exclamation point.
I like that as an exclamation.
Yeah.
For when, like, something goes wrong.
I just gotta know who's saying that.
Yeah. Well, I guess who's saying...
Am I saying, oh, Daisy?
In the original Super Mario Brothers, who is saying...
Thank you, Mario.
But our princess... Is it the Toads?
I think it's the Toad, like, retainer, yes.
The retainer, yes. Yeah, that's what... Yeah. Huh. Maybe the bug is saying it.
Okay, is saying, oh, Daisy! Like, yeah. It doesn't know how to... It worked
like Men in Black.
Quite an effort. Yes, that's right. It is a bug wearing a Daisy suit, and all it knows about Daisy is her name, and so it just tries to say that, and then turns into a bug and hops away.
Yeah, maybe.
Demands a glass of sugar water.
Is it... I think it's interesting that we have a special place in our heart for Wart, the kind of forgotten boss of Super Mario Brothers 2 or Super Mario Brothers USA, but I can't really get that worked up about Tatanga, about people not caring about Tatanga.
Yeah.
Like, I've never, like, Tatanga should be in Smash Brothers.
Well, so this is interesting. I've been saying Tatanga, and I don't know which one of us is right. Is it T-A-T-A-N-G-A, or is it T-A-N-T-O-N-G-A?
I honestly think we should continue to say it differently, so that way whichever one is right, we have our bases covered.
Okay,
and we never have to find out.
Okay, great. So, but do you keep saying Tatanga and I keep saying Tatanga?
I think so.
Okay. All right, maybe we'll look halfway,
we might accidentally switch
halfway through the episode. Let's switch. Okay, so Metroid, yes. Alleyway, yes. Super Mario Land, yes. I'm also still working on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I'm starting to panic a little bit because we are... Well, should we just get into the new releases?
Yeah, let's do it.
And what we might be playing next week. Mark, this is the new releases and what we might be playing next week.
All right. Patrick, you put together the show notes this week, and when I was looking at the new releases...
Yes.
I was like, aha, I think I found an error here.
Right.
Because you said, have...
You idiot!
You have Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door, as releasing Thursday, May 23rd, which is not a Nintendo day to release things. They're a Friday company. Do you remember when they used to be a Sunday company?
I do remember.
In the Wii era.
When they were like groundlings.
I remember going to Best Buy when Mario Kart Wii was released.
This and is it was, exactly the game I was going
and
to use
it was
for
a Sunday.
Anecdote. Yes.
But then...
also Smash. I remember going to Best Buy on a Sunday for that.
And then, you know, probably 10, probably more than that, probably like 15 years ago, they switched to being to doing their new releases on Friday. Except when you get a Thousand Year Door on Thursday.
Endless Ocean Luminous was also a Thursday release.
What is happening?
But that's something where I'm like, that feels like as third party as a published by Nintendo game could possibly be. So I was like, and that's fine, right? Retail price of $50. I feel like the rules are just a little like wishier, washier. But here we are, Thursday release for Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door.
I'm going to look up Luigi's Mansion 2 HD.
Oh, yeah.
Because so that releases on June 27th.
Okay, and is that a Thursday or a Friday? June 27th is a Thursday.
So, did...
What? Wait, what's happening?
Did Nintendo just stealthily...
Become a Thursday company?
Like a Thursday company, and nobody... I just feel like this should have been flagged for me by somebody.
Right. I mean, maybe that's us.
Do we have... Okay. What other new release from Nintendo has a release date? Do we have...
No, that's it.
Oh, interesting.
I mean...
there's like third-party stuff for October that we know of, right? But...
Yeah. Well, and like we know that Pokemon comes out next year.
Right. But nothing with like
a
hard
date. Yeah.
Date. Huh. All right. I guess like watch this... base, baby Nintendo is just releasing on Thursdays now.
I think we've shifted.
Oh, no, we do.
Like a...
What is the date of the Nintendo World Championships?
Nintendo World Championships, I believe, is the 12th, which is a Wednesday, so that may not even be right. But
okay, Nintendo World Championships.
Or it's July.
Releases on the 18th.
July 18th?
Yeah.
A Thursday.
Okay.
I think we just made like a bombshell discovery here. Nintendo is a Thursday company.
Yeah, this is wild. Do you think they're just slowly working, like in 20 years from now, they'll be like Tuesday?
They'll be a Monday company.
They'll be a Monday company. And then they'll be a Sunday company again.
Right. They will have gone full circle.
Yeah.
I mean, remember when like new things like media in general used to come out on Tuesday? That was like home video releases and new like CDs.
When I worked at a bookstore, it was like Tuesdays were the big release date for that kind of stuff.
Well, so very interesting. I can't believe we just discovered that in real time. I feel like we've crossed into an alternate plane of reality.
There's
a glitch in the matrix or something.
I honestly feel like because
is my top falling over or isn't it? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was struggling to think of another Christopher Nolan movie title, but I'm going to get there.
Oppenheimer.
It's the one. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one with Hilary Swank and Robin Williams. Insomnia.
Yes. Pacino is in that too, right?
Yeah.
Is Hilary Swank in that movie?
Yes, because okay. I think Hilary Swank is Al Pacino's like partner, and then Robin Williams is the killer,
right?
The bad guy.
He went through like a phase of being like
one hour photo
of yes, of course.
Now we're just naming movies. We've gotta we should just move on.
Here's something I wanted to point out. Also coming out this week. On Tuesday is a game called Paper Trail, and also on Thursday, along with Paper Mario, a game called Paper Dash Invasion of Greed. And I just want to know, do you think this is a coincidence that two other games that start with the word paper are coming out the week that Paper Mario Thousand Year Door releases?
Oh, yeah. It's like a paper trilogy.
It is a paper trilogy. I think that people are just like hoping to ride that SEO train and are like, look, people are going to be looking for Paper Mario. Let's just put out our paper game. Right
and
now.
Maybe somebody will be confused.
Yeah.
And they'll accidentally buy Paper Trail instead.
Yeah. But, you know, the Papers, Please could go for like a new like re-release this week. Just position. Set yourself up for success, I guess, is what I'm saying. Paper Mario Thousand Year Door, a game that you and I are both interested in and excited for.
Yep.
But another like, you know, dozens of hours long RPG.
Yes.
That I feel like is going to come crashing into my Final Fantasy VII Rebirth play through, and I don't know what to do. Mark, what do you, I mean, you don't have the same conundrum, but are you like decks cleared, ready for a Paper Mario?
I think I am.
Okay.
We have a game in mind for our June Nintendo Switch or June NCS Arcade episode.
Yes.
That is going to take a time commitment.
Yes.
But I think I can balance the two. I think one thing that's nice for you, although I guess it's true for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth as well, that, like, I don't really feel like you have to rush through Paper Mario Thousand Year Door.
That's a great point.
It's not like, you know, Tears of the Kingdom or something like that, where...
Which we also didn't really rush through,
that's,
right?
Right, but yeah. Where it's like, oh, like, everybody's playing it right now, everybody's talking about it right now.
Right.
Like, Thousand Year Door came out during the GameCube. It's a known... quantity.
Yes.
And so yeah, I don't know. I guess I feel like you have the luxury of time with that one.
A friend of mine, what up Delaney, if you're listening, was complaining about the trailer for the new Wicked movie, right? Giving away the whole story of the movie. But like it's been a Broadway show for decades. Like, it's already, right? Like, is there any danger of the trailer giving too much away at that point?
I also think that a guiding principle of movie trailers is audiences, generally speaking, do not want to be surprised. They want to know
yes.
what they're buying.
Right.
And so I think it's like, it's why, like, in trailers for comedies, they often put like the best jokes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, also that's like, it's like the way to sell what you're going to get, right? Is like, here, look, you see how funny this is? Why would you show the bad jokes?
You know, if I were writing a comedy, I just wouldn't write any bad jokes in it.
Oh,
but that's just me.
What a great point. Your comedy would have no jokes in it. All right, so we're excited about Paper Mario. I don't know, anything else to say on that game, or are we just like, we're going headlong into it and we'll play it and be happy about it?
Yeah, I am excited that this is being released on Switch. It'll be interesting to see what, like, the full breadth of the quality of life improvements they've made to it. Because I really like Thousand Year Door. It did have a lot of backtracking. It wasn't a perfect game. So, yeah, just interested to see what that all is.
All right. Well, those are the new releases. Let's close this segment out. Which brings us to a regular segment on our show. It is time for 433. In 1952, American composer John Cage wrote a piece called 433, wherein a performer or group of performers didn't play their instruments for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. For the purposes of this show, our instruments are talking about Nintendo. So, for the duration of one performance, 433, Mark and I will talk about something not at all Nintendo-related, thus fulfilling the contract of the piece. Mark and I went to the movies last weekend.
A lot of movie talk this episode.
There is a lot of movies. Is it because we went to the movies?
The Dark Knight.
Yeah, we were holding off on the Batman ones, right? And now we've like broken the seal there.
I think I said Batman Begins at the beginning of the episode.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay, well then I'll say
I
Dark
slipped
Knight
it in there.
Rises?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, uh-huh. We're going to run out of Nolan movies by the end of this episode, though.
Well, then we'll just have to pick a new director. but so we saw Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes that you and I are both fans. Oh, and so this is what we're talking about. Is we're talking about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. We'll try not to be very spoilery here.
Yeah.
But just to, and we cannot talk about how it's directed by the gentleman who's going to be directing the new Zelda movie, because that's talking about Nintendo.
Right.
So what'd you think of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Mark?
I really liked it. I've liked all of the newer Planet of the Apes movies.
Yeah.
Why is Planet of the Apes a series that I care anything about?
This is a great question.
Because as a kid...
As a kid, they were dusty old movies.
They were dusty old movies, but, like, I was... Like, when they were on AMC or something,
yeah.
I was... I've seen all the... Every Planet of the Apes movie that's
right.
ever been made.
All?
I have seen.
10 of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And So, I have an affinity for the series. I liked the previous three.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one, like, it takes... Is connected to the previous three, but just, like... loosely and can be its own thing.
Yeah, it can definitely be its own thing. I do like that it takes the so like Caesar is the like main character of the previous trilogy, right? That the Andy Serkis ape that gets smart and then like leads the rest of the apes to like revolution over the humans. And like that's our perspective character kind of throughout that whole series, right? Which is not like really part of the like original movies. Like the original movies would kind of like shift protagonists between entries.
Everybody was dying all the time.
Everyone was dying. The end of the second movie is the Earth explodes. and like the main characters in the third one die at the end of that. So yeah, it's all like yes, the characters be dying. But Caesar dies at the end of the third. Of the third like new Planet of the Apes movies, and this movie starts off with him like being like burned like a funereal pyre, right?
But then it jumps forward like many generations.
Yes, many generations is the language that it says on screen, and then it uses him as like a prophetic figure or like a figure to be worshipped, whose words get like twisted by different like groups of apes, and so like. Just like in how Beneath the Planet of the Apes that they're like the mutants living underground are worshiping an atomic bomb. There's like a question of faith and like, what is the intent of Caesar? What is the intent of like the bomb? It's all very, I like the thematic material that the series plays with. And it's cool that the new ones are playing with similar stuff.
Yeah. That is one thing that's kind of, that's, I would say this one had less like commentary, like social commentary, than some of the others in the mm-hmm. series do. But I still think it had ideas that it was, you know, like working with. These movies just look so good. This movie looked so good.
Kind of staggering, right? To the point where you're like, how are they putting, like, and I guess, like, they've made Avatar movies, so, like, this is just what that is. But, like, how are you putting fully CG photorealistic characters in every scene of this movie?
And it looks, and, like, they look realistic. Mm-hmm. Like, you care about these apes.
Yeah.
You
laugh at their facial expressions, like, or at least Mark and I did.
Yeah, I really liked this movie. I also just like the look. We were talking a little bit about this after the movie. Like, I just like the look of Planet of the Apes.
Yeah,
like the ape scarecrows that harken back all the way to that first movie.
Mm-hmm. The 68 Planet of the Apes. Yeah,
it has really striking design.
Yes, very striking design. And I was like turning over in my head, you saying that this movie maybe doesn't have as many like philosophical ideas that it's like tackling as like the previous ones. I think like the original series is definitely more leaning on those kinds of ideas. Because the first one's co-written by Rod Serling, right? Like it's basically a Twilight Zone episode, but a movie. And then, like, the rest of the movies kind of follow suit. I think the first three in this series don't really play that much with, like, abstract ideas.
Rise definitely doesn't. The very right. first one, the James Franco one.
All right. Well, that's... Mark, I'm glad we had this conversation about the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. We were accompanied today by an ensemble at the Musical Instrument Museum in Phoenix. Mark, let's get into... Hold on, I'm setting up the music cues here. Let's get into the news. Nope. I even took extra time to set it up, and it just made applause happen. Let's get into the news.
Nintendo has acquired Shiver Entertainment, the studio responsible for ports of recent high-budget multi-platform games on Switch like Mortal Kombat 11, and Hogwarts Legacy.
I apologize. That should be Mortal Kombat 1.
Oh, Mortal Kombat 1.
Yes.
Established in 2012, Shiver Entertainment was purchased by the Embracer Group at the end of 2021. And now, you know, just 2.5 years later, Nintendo is buying it.
Yes. So this is interesting for a number of reasons, but I think sort of maybe not principally among them, but, you know, like we talk a lot about like mergers and companies being acquired on this show, because that's what's happening in the video game industry right now. And it's almost always bad news, right? But in this case, it almost feels like Nintendo is rescuing them from the Embracer Group.
Right. Yeah. And it seems like when's the last time Nintendo shut down a studio? Like,
right.
Like it feels like if
I mean, they let Alpha Dream go under, but like,
but
that's
that was
not
a third party,
yeah,
right?
Third
that
party,
was like,
yeah.
If it kind of feels like being acquired by Nintendo would be the dream for a development studio.
Yeah. Well, and okay. So the Switch ports for Mortal Kombat 1 and Hogwarts Legacy, worth pointing out here that those were hugely successful games on Switch. Mortal Kombat 1 is like a moderately successful game, sold about 3 million copies, but like that's as much as, you know, like that's a successful game, right? But Hogwarts Legacy on Switch sold over 24 million copies.
Is that real?
Yes.
Wow.
So, it's a studio that has a track record, right?
Well, and so part of the question when I read this was, what are they going to be doing
mm-hmm.
for Nintendo? And so this is part of the notice from Nintendo about the acquisition, quote, Nintendo will acquire 100% of the outstanding shares of Shiver and make it a wholly owned subsidiary. By welcoming Shiver's experienced and accomplished development team, Nintendo aims to secure high-level resources for porting and developing software titles. Going forward, even after it becomes a part of the Nintendo Group, Shiver's focus will remain the same, continuing commissions that port and develop software for multiple platforms, including Nintendo Switch.
Right. So, but not just Nintendo Switch. Although, could that just be leaving the door open for Nintendo Switch and the successor to the Nintendo Switch?
Yeah, it's possible. It seems... I don't... I don't know how much work Shiver has done on porting games to other systems.
Right.
Or, like, developing on their own. But what I find so interesting about this is Nintendo is acquiring Shiver seemingly to continue doing the work that they're doing now, which is port games from other developers to Nintendo platforms. So does this become part of, like, Nintendo's sales pitch to third parties? Like, hey, you...
Right.
We have the resources to do a good port of this game.
Right.
And so...
Would not only do we have these resources in the form of the studio that has done a good job of it before, but they are now also backed by us because we own them, and we understand it's always true, right? That no one knows Nintendo hardware like Nintendo. So, like, they're going to be able to basically port anything,
yeah,
within reason, I suppose, to the Nintendo Switch and whatever comes next.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like all good news.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of boggling my mind a little bit that is... I think it says a lot about where Nintendo sees opportunity.
Yeah.
In getting third parties, getting third-party developers to publish their games on Switch, like, or on Nintendo platforms. Like, because I'm wondering, like, is it a scenario where... a third-party developer, like Nintendo, goes to a third-party developer and is like, we have the resources to do it, but the third-party developer pays Shiver Entertainment just like they would normally, develop the port? Or is it a scenario where...
like Nintendo goes out like shopping to these other third-party games, like big hits, and are like, will you let us make a Switch version?
We will do the work.
Yeah, it's a good question. I just had a thought that, like, what if this is to make games that are being targeted for the Switch 2 playable on the old Switch? Like, what if that's that they are, you know, that they are like leash off for everybody else to, go and like use the new power of the new hardware to make more impressive games, and then it's up to Shiver to figure out how to make those work on the original Switch.
Oh, to do like cross-generation titles.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's a little less exciting, but it's seems like a practical matter, just knowing how many Switches are out there in the wild, right?
Yeah.
That's an audience that you ignore at your peril.
I think the last studio that Nintendo acquired was... And certainly the last studio outside of Japan that Nintendo acquired was
Next Level
Games. Yeah. And that was in 2021.
Right, right.
So Nintendo's...
Which was right as Shiver was being acquired by Embracer Group.
It's just interesting that Nintendo has been on a hiring spree internally. Like in Japan, they're trying to grow their development resources by a lot. They're very picky and choosy about acquisitions.
Yeah, but I mean, we did also hear about them cutting down their QA team in the States.
Yes.
So, like, it's not all growth, but it does seem like it is kind of a lot of growth. But not, you know, not in a, like, they're not buying Activision Blizzard kind of way, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like they wait for... It makes sense. Like, Nintendo is such a... culture-driven company that it makes sense that they would be very choosy about making third-party outside acquisitions to grow Nintendo.
Right. Well, and like, you know, it's less true here with Shiver, but like with something like Next Level, you're like, they didn't own Next Level, you know? Like it's one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, they're kind of just like formalizing something that had been going on for a while, a little bit like a PlayStation buying Insomniac, you know, for example. It seems like another cool resource that Nintendo has going forward here.
I also wonder how long it'll take for us to see the fruits of this acquisition. Because probably Shiver is already working. They were already working on...
Great point. Something for Nintendo, yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe third parties had hired them.
Yeah.
You know, they're already working on ports for third parties. And then now there's this Nintendo acquisition. And how long will it take for it to like ramp up and we actually see the implications of Nintendo owning them.
I find the whole like Embracer part of this very interesting, right? That the Embracer Group is in a position now where they're like, oh yeah, we overspent on studios. What was the game that they had like a bizarre like deal with some like local government or something, and then that deal fell through?
I don't know if it was a specific game. My half-formed memory, I read a headline somewhere about this, is that the like private equity fund that the government of Saudi Arabia owns was like was working with Embracer to make a large investment in Embracer, and then that fell through, and that's kind of the start of this whole thing.
That may be what I'm thinking. Yeah, so that they are in a like a cost cutting mode, canceling a bunch of projects, and like seemingly selling off assets.
Fire sale seems
That's probably where Nintendo was like, yeah, we can afford to buy. You're motivated to sell, we'll buy.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder who else is going to be picked up by whom. From the Embracer Group.
Capcom released a new overview trailer for Monster Hunter Stories 1.
Which, by the way, I just want to like tag in for a second here to be like, hey, remember Monster Hunter Stories 1 is coming to Switch?
Yeah.
Remember this?
In June, right?
Yes.
The remake of the 3DS RPG was announced at the Mini Direct Partner Showcase in February with a release window of this summer. But now we know it is June 14th. Other features touched on in the video.
Hold on, looking it up. Gotta know what day of the week it is. June 14th. It's a Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday. I think this one.
It's a Friday. My fault.
Oh, it's a Friday.
But this is a Capcom game.
This is a Capcom game.
Right.
But Capcom... Nintendo's not publishing this one.
I believe they are not.
Okay.
But I don't know, honestly. I'll look it up while you keep reading.
Other features that are touched on in the video include refined graphics. So, this is what it says. Originally released on the Nintendo 3DS, players can now experience riding monsties in stunning detail on larger screens, enhanced with improved modeling textures and lighting in high definition. It's now fully voiced. There is additional language support. There's a museum mode where you can delve deeper into the world of Monster Hunter Stories, including like you can isolate the game's background music and there's sketches.
Which, of course, is something that we wanted from Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, but we'll never get.
Never get. And then you have to save something for Mario Kart 9, right? And then included type here. Sidebar.
Yeah.
The debate rages online whether the next Mario Kart game will be Mario Kart 10, because does Tour count as Mario Kart 9?
Well, here's... sure. I mean, I think it certainly can. If for no other reason than... the first time we saw a numbered Mario Kart was 7, right? Like,
right.
All the rest of them have just had names, and we've been like, but also secretly that one's number 2, you know? So, like, 7 and 8 have been the only numbered ones, and, like, you know, Mario Kart X, like, yeah,
that'd be awesome.
Or just give it a name, I don't know. Triple Dash.
Yes, there we go. There we go. Also includes title updates that were previously only available in Japan. I'm assuming this means that there was like DLC that was available for the first game.
Right. Yes.
That never was localized outside of Japan, but it is included here in this Switch release.
I confirmed it's being published by Capcom. So that explains why it's not coming out on Thursday. But I wonder what Capcom's expectations are for this, because it's not like the Monster Hunter Stories 2, which, you know, launched on Switch, was like a particularly successful or high selling game.
I don't remember hearing anything about, you know,
yeah,
it sold X number of copies,
or even like seeing it in the like bestseller list on the eShop. This is the first one in the series. They obviously like the premise enough of this one, or like that sales well enough to make a sequel. I don't know. It just, I'm always curious what, especially as, like developers like Square Enix are like, we got to scale back on this like middle of the road kind of stuff. That Capcom's like, no, we just keep doing it. We just keep putting stuff out.
In a live stream with Hideki Kamiya, Super Smash Brothers director Masahiro Sakurai revealed that he cut Dolby Surround's audio support from the GameCube game Kirby Air Ride.
Mm-hmm.
Non-possessive.
Non-possessive. This is one of the, take note, it's not Kirby's Air Ride, it's just Kirby Air Ride.
And he did it so they wouldn't have to include the Dolby title card at the beginning of the game, saying that he wanted to keep the time in which people were waiting between turning the game on and being able to start the game to a minimum.
Okay, so, and he goes on to say that, like, he wished that that was something that, like, other developers kept in mind. So, gut check. Think about the Masahiro Sakurai games that you've played in the past. Have they been snappy, you get to gameplay right away?
I can't really remember. I'm thinking Smash Brothers is pretty good at it.
Smash Brothers is pretty good at it. Although, Smash on the 3DS, I feel like, takes forever to get into gameplay. But that's just because it's on a 3DS mm-hmm. and it loads slowly. Kirby games, usually pretty fast.
Sure.
Kid
Icarus, I don't remember waiting. I feel like an audit is in order.
Yes, yes, exactly. Because there are some ways here where this feels, like, self-aggrandizing, right? And, like, do we have any way to verify that, like, he was going to use Dolby Surround and he was like, no, it takes another 4 seconds to get to gameplay, so we're not doing it?
It's so hard for me to imagine Masahiro Sakurai lying about anything ever.
No, he's a sweet boy, and I don't mean to put anything he's saying into doubt. But, you know, it's just like this feels like mythologizing, mm-hmm. right? He wanted to spare everyone 4 seconds, so he found some other way to make the audio work. I don't know. It's just a funny little detail.
Yeah, definitely. I also like the idea of him and Kamiya being friends. I don't know what the context of the video was, but
yeah.
Just like to imagine like Japanese great video game developers hanging out together.
Yeah, and especially like in the place that Sakurai is right now where he's like, I'll just say whatever I want, doesn't matter. And Kamiya, who's always like that,
uh-huh.
the two of them together at this point in history is a pretty special thing.
Well, speaking of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes and A433, where we didn't talk about the director that much, Sony Motion Pictures Group Chairman Tom Rothman gave an interview to Deadline last week talking about the Zelda movie, which the director of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Wes Ball, is attached to direct right now, and that they are producing with Nintendo. Understandably, he described the project as massive and huge for us. He also emphasized their close working relationship with Nintendo and Shigeru Miyamoto, saying, quote, because the movie is being developed and made in the closest possible collaboration with Nintendo video game designer Shigeru Miyamoto, he's a true genius in that world, and it's really his strong vision that is motivating it. He created it and understands it thoroughly. You only have to look at the results of Super Mario Brothers to see.
How does that make you feel, Mark?
Well, I didn't like the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Right, me
But
neither.
There's no denying that it was immensely successful.
Right. Massive and huge for us.
So, yeah, I think my expectations are low enough.
Yeah.
That the Zelda movie would have to be really terrible for me to be disappointed.
Sure. I do feel like seeing Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes did, like, raise my expectations a little bit.
Raise my hopes for sure.
Yeah, I guess that's more accurate.
Because it was well directed.
Yeah. And like looked great.
Mm-hmm.
So and you know, like working in IP that's like a little bit tricky to, you know, whatever. So anyway, I assume that Wes Ball will do a good job directing the movie. And it makes sense to me that like we lean on Miyamoto for a Mario movie. Why are we leaning on Miyamoto for a Zelda movie? I know like he invents the series and like, you know, remains like interested in it and like involved in its development, but like what about Fujibayashi? What about Aonuma? You know, like there are these other caretakers of the Zelda brand that have been responsible for shaping it over the last, you know, at least 2 decades, probably longer, that like, why are they not the sort of like point people for that? And is it just because Miyamoto is like Hollywood Miyamoto now?
I think that's part of it. I think it's part of his role in Nintendo now.
Yeah.
Is to help them expand into like movies and into theme parks, because he was also point person, you know, on, and I'm sure there are other people at Nintendo who are working on these. It was interesting that we learned during the development of Super Mario Brothers Wonder that the team working on Wonder, like, they weren't seeing footage of the movie. They were totally separate.
Right, yeah.
And I imagine that's the same case here, that, you know, maybe Aonuma is looking at storyboards or whatever, but I'm guessing that they're, that Nintendo, it seems like Nintendo is pretty purposefully siloing the movie stuff at this point from the video game stuff.
Yeah.
And the two are not crossing over.
And that Miyamoto is, like, doing a lot of that movie stuff now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes that does make sense to me. There is just something where I'm like, where is the juice for Zelda, right? Like, you could make the argument that, like, the special important nugget of Mario that you want to see in a Mario movie is present as far back as the 80s and 90s, right? But, like, for a Zelda game, or for a Zelda movie, rather, like, don't we kind of want to see it looking more like a modern Zelda game? I'm trying to, like, pinpoint where, like, what manner of Zelda gets adapted.
Well, also, don't forget that in the lead up to Breath of the Wild,
yeah,
Miyamoto was front and center for a lot of it. That was not true for Tears of the Kingdom, but for Breath of the Wild, like, there was it the Video Game Awards or some presentation where it was Miyamoto and Aonuma, and they were sitting next to a TV. And I think it was Miyamoto who had the Wii U controller and was having Link run through it. Like, I would say it's only in the... and I would also say that, arguably, the Zelda series now is the closest it's been to that first game.
That's true.
As it's ever been in the past, you know, like, 30 years between the two of them. So, but I get what you're saying, though. Like, as far as what Zelda is today, how much involvement does Miyamoto have?
Right.
Like, none. But as to what the, or very little,
right.
But as to what that, the core spark of what Zelda is, I think he can carry that with him into the development of the movie.
And obviously now he has this track record of one of, like, the most successful movie of last year. So what are you going to do?
What I am interested in seeing is that Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes has been financially successful.
Yes.
And they, it can clearly, the series can continue after this movie. So I'll be interested to see.
The world doesn't blow up at the end of it.
I'll be interested to see if an announcement for a sequel is made.
Yeah.
And if Wes Ball is attached to direct.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And, like, if there's any sense of timing, because if they intend to, like, make another Planet of the Apes movie in the next 3 years, if Zelda's happening in the next 3 years, then Wes Ball won't be able to be involved with it.
Right.
Other than, like, maybe an executive producer or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, wouldn't be able to be. Well,
he's not going to be the director.
He'd have to pick one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that, like, yeah, I mean, but would you walk away from directing a Zelda movie?
Well, but what I'm saying is, I think it'll give us a sense of timing of the Zelda movie, because it's like, oh, I can make a whole nother Planet of the Apes before Zelda's going to be ready to roll.
Yeah, great point.
We're not seeing Zelda until, like, 2029,
right?
You know, 2028. Right. So, yeah, just something to watch for. Read the tea leaves.
Yeah, I like that. Although, I mean, there's nothing really that says that they have to continue with the same director, right? Like, Matt Reeves didn't actually do all three of the movies in the previous trilogy, just the second two.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And I'm not saying that they couldn't. All I'm saying is if they announce a sequel to Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, it'll just be interesting to see if Wes Ball is attached as the director.
Right.
And yeah, because maybe Zelda is closer to go than we realize. And so he films that first, and then he does a Planet of the Apes sequel. Maybe a Planet of the Apes sequel is announced, and he's not attached to it,
right.
Which means Zelda's, like, cooking. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and, like, the other, like, Apes directors are, like, and, like, people who are involved in the Apes series that are directors are now, like, occupied with other stuff. Like, Andy Serkis is going to be directing the new Lord of the Rings movie, and Matt Reeves is still doing Batman 2, right? Batman 2.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah.
I was trying to remember the name of the director of the first of the Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, it's
the James
impossible.
Franco one. I think it's like Rupert Evans. Okay. I think he also directed Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
But I don't know what he's done since then.
Well, maybe they just get him back. Mark, a lot of movie talk in this episode.
Okay. And finally, results from this weekend's Splatoon 3 Splatfest. The question, if you'll recall, is what do you do at the world's end?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was...
The winning answer.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
There were three answers.
There were three
yes.
answers. They were team same old. Mm-hmm. You don't really do anything different.
Right.
Team bucket list. You're trying to check the things off your bucket list. Or team save the day.
Yeah.
Which I think we determined we would be team save the day, right?
I feel like you volunteered us for that, yeah. I said team same old. I was like, well.
That's not how we're going out.
Okay.
The winner was team bucket list with 415 points. Just not that much higher than team same old.
Right.
Which was 395 points. Team save the day.
Got trounced in
trounced
this one.
By 60 points.
Well, Trounced with 60 only 60 points. They yeah. had a, it's just an absolutely embarrassing showing from Saves the Day. Saves the Day team, you're not saving anything.
Well, maybe they were too busy preparing for the apocalypse.
That's a great point, yes.
To partake in the Splatoon 3.
Maybe people were confused and they thought that picking that team meant that they would just listen to Saves the Day records.
I bet that's it.
That, like, late 90s, early 2000s, like, emo band?
Yep.
That's probably what they were
thinking. That's probably what it was.
I wouldn't want to do that.
No.
And you volunteered us for that?
I must have confused them with Real Big Fish.
How dare you? All right, Mark, let's get out of the news. All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society. Thank you so much for listening. You should join our Discord if you're not in there already. Email us, nintendocartridgesociety@gmail.com. We will send you an invitation. Anthony DeLuca made our logo. Our theme music is provided by 8BitBetty. You can get more of his music by going to 8BitBetty.com or by listening right now. From my co-host, Mark Mitchell, this is Patrick Eller saying thank you for listening.